All right, everybody, welcome to my Saturday podcast. We get a lot of positive feedback on these because I don't necessarily talk a ton of sports. Last week we had the author of the Robin Williams book from the New York Times. And we love sometimes Malcolm Gladwell stops by. Michael Mulvihill talked about the industry of sports broadcasting. Today we have Tom Colbert, who is the organizer and producer of The Last Master Outlaw, how he, D.B. Cooper, outfoxed the FBI six times, but not a cold case team. And by the way, this is the first of 25 D.B. Cooper books to receive not one, but three national awards for true crime. And as a kid growing up in the Pacific Northwest, there were two stories to me that one is officially solved, and this one appears to be. One was the Green River Killer, of which I've read every book and seen every documentary, Gary Ridgway finally captured for his horrific crimes. The second one is about D.B. Cooper. I'll do a thumbnail on it. It was a flight that was hijacked. Don't have those in America much. Young man at the time, presumably young man, demanded money, got it, jumped out of the back of the plane. What happened to him? Well, our guy, Tom Colbert, thinks he knows what happened to him. So first of all, welcome to our Saturday podcast. Tom, let's start. I mean, I imagine 30 years ago, you didn't think you'd be writing a book about D.B. Cooper. What's the genesis for the book? What's your background?
Well, my background, I was, and thank you for having me on, Colin, and I understand you're a bookend like I am on the Cooper case.
Yeah.
I know a lot about it. I was the senior researcher at the CBS news station in Los Angeles, KCBS,
yeah,
for almost 10 years, then Paramount as a story editor. And so I would get the calls every few months back in the 80s and 90s. You know, hey, it was my uncle on his deathbed, or I know a neighbor. I was the lucky guy that got those calls. And obviously, as a teenager, I heard about it at the breakfast table, Dad opening the paper in 1971, seeing that big headline. So I've lived with it. It's been a backstory. And then somebody brought me the story, one of my old cameraman buddies in Las Vegas, who has his own network of sources in the casinos. There was a guy there who had something to get off his chest, a guy about to become a grandpa. And he sat him down on camera, and lo and behold, he tells the story. The one piece of evidence found in the Cooper case, as you probably know, Colin, was the $5,800 on the shore,
yes,
of the Columbia River,
yes,
in 1980.
Yeah.
And he claimed, this man speaking, was a drug runner. And it was his drug trafficker who told him at a cocaine party right on the river, 5 days before that money was found. He says, I know you don't believe I'm Cooper. Didn't even look like him. And the guys are like, sure, boss, you're Cooper, you Cooper. This went on for a year. And then finally says, I know you don't believe me. Well, let me point something out to you. He points across at the party where there's a bunch of clients. And he says, see that couple? They and their boy are going to find some of my money, and he points out the window, on the North Shore over there in 4 or 5 days. Well, this drug runner and his partner said, sure, boss, sure, boss. They left for a drug run towards Phoenix. 3 or 4 days later, then a hotel in Reno, they turn on the tube, and there is the couple with their boy in the news, pointing at the area they found the cash. These two guys kept it a secret for 40 years till that day in the casino in 2011. And that's how I got involved.
You sued the Bureau, FBI, to get information, did you not?
We sued them because we had put together a 40-member cold case team, 23 of them feds, 13 of them FBI, including a couple of U.S. attorneys, who gathered this information, more than 100 pieces of evidence. And we brought it. We had an agreement, an understanding from headquarters. And the week we were to turn it in, with History Channel cameras rolling, the FBI backed out. They said, well, we're fearful of a circumstantial case. And you can understand that, but that doesn't explain why they're still looking for Jimmy Hoffa 4 decades later.
Right.
We got a live suspect, and they backed out. Well, that's when my wife and I, two things. One, we decided to do what Californians do. We sued. And we sued the FBI, and it took us 6 months, thanks to an incredible Washington reporter. I'm sorry, an incredible Washington, D.C. attorney by the name of Mark Zaid. And Mark sued for our team, and we won. 6 months later, a judge ruled we could have access to the archives that they had closed in 2016. And the rest is incredible history.
It's interesting because the FBI actually, in the mid to late 70s, didn't they find Cooper and suspect it was him? And then soon after that, let it go. Like, give me the backstory on that.
Well, we had he did get away, and obviously the FBI you know, were happy about that. It was an embarrassing fact, and because of our FOIA, our Freedom of Information Act, we documented how he got away and so forth. Well, in 78, our suspect, and who we believe to be Cooper, is caught for various crimes in California unrelated, check kiting and other things.
Yeah.
And suddenly local cops look at this guy and said, hey, he's a pilot, he's a paratrooper, he looks like him. They tip the FBI. They chase him twice around the globe, all the way to Iran in the last year of the Shah, and bring him back. And then he does a mayday off of Monterey Bay and gets away for another 4 months. Well, finally, when they sit him down and they look at him in Seattle, in February of 79, suddenly, after the FBI chased him for a year and a half, they announced, well, he's not a suspect. We've cleared him. There were six FBI agents who had interviewed his family, crime partners, former veteran partners. They were furious. In fact, it's the biggest unpublicized insurrection in the FBI history. All six of them, separately on their own, went to papers that day and said, no, he is a suspect. We are gathering information, and that article leak in Seattle is incorrect. It was stunning. And that's one of those six joined our team, members of 13.
Why would the FBI, give your theory, I know what it is, why would the FBI, the feeling here is your suspect, who is Robert Rackstraw, who I've seen the video online, who, by the way, early on, looks exactly like him. Very angular face, same hair, same nose. I mean, it's impossible to see the picture of Rackstraw at whatever that age was. It looks like mid-20s. And then look at D.B. Cooper. If you just put glasses on Rackstraw, he's D.B. Cooper. Why wouldn't they want to get him? Why wouldn't they put him in jail? Why wouldn't they secure him?
He was 28 years old when he did this, and he used putty makeup, according to some letters that were sent afterwards. There are six famous letters that were sent after. Ha-ha, you can't find me letters. And he talked about using putty makeup, a toupee, and he left no prints. Those were three secrets until the 1980s. FBI never talked about that. That's why the FBI knew that letter, number five of six, was from Cooper himself. Well, why wouldn't they charge him in 1978-79?
Yes. Why?
Letter number two, he mentions in code, and we'll talk about the code in a little bit. He talks about if he gets in trouble, alert the CIA. And we have, in fact, found out through court records, eyewitnesses in Vietnam, and people, including law enforcement, that he was a very valuable black ops pilot for the CIA from 1970. All the way, we believe, into the 80s, into Iran-Contra.
So he has information they don't want out.
Well, they considered him a valuable service to the country through the black ops community. We're not questioning the black ops community or anybody working in the shadows to protect us. We're curious and angry, obviously, about a man who comes back and flaunts the law. And that's why we feel the FBI hasn't charged him.
Let's talk about the letter that you found. Letter 5 basically contained his confession, but in code.
The audience can go up to dbcooper.com and see all six letters. And the most valuable one is number 5. At the bottom, he lists four papers he sent it to. And in code, according to one of his former Vietnam codebusters that worked with him in Vietnam, we tracked down 12 of his veterans, including his lieutenant colonel, who has the old code book from 1950. And lo and behold, this codebuster looks at the bottom of letter 5 and goes, Tom, he put his top secret units there. And those units were secret until the 80s. That's why the FBI couldn't break it. And we did. And we have codes in all six letters.
Peter Millar was founded 17 years ago in 2001 with a single cashmere sweater, and has grown into a premium American lifestyle brand featuring a wide range of casual sportswear, tailored menswear, and luxury performance golf apparel. It's just the fit, the quality, the style. It's really becoming the standard in menswear. I've been wearing it all summer long. And the Peter Millar pants, you get the style, you get the comfort. I wear it to dinner. I wear it on the driving range. It's highly breathable, lightweight, highest quality Pima cotton. So a nice, comfortable feel, easy stretch. And I've been wearing these things all summer. I'm usually a jeans guy, not this year. So you can get up, wear them to the range, wear them at lunch, wear them to dinner, wear them out. Peter Millar is my go-to clothing for vacation, work events, golf course, whatevs. The five-pocket pants, by the way, I'm wearing those. Say this by Peter Millar. Right now, making a mistake if you don't go to petermillar.com/herd. Check out some of my favorites. Complimentary shipping, a free hat. That's Peter Millar, MILLAR.com/herd, HERD. The book is called, he's the co-author of The Last Master Outlaw, How He Outfoxed the FBI Six Times, But Not a Cold Case Team. And the other co-author is Tom Solacy, I think is his name, Tom Solacy. Did the government, by the way, in your investigation, did the government ever help you, or were you antagonistic? Was it an antagonistic relationship?
I've been a law enforcement instructor for 30 years through Camp San Luis, 17 years teaching FBI and those in uniform and badges. We're very my wife and I are pro-law enforcement, and that's why we stacked our team of 40 with 23 feds. We wanted them comfortable with their former feds to work this. They at first said, we'll accept all the evidence. We have an agreement in an email. We'll accept your evidence. And then they backed out. This is all about embarrassment and a cover-up between two agencies. I do want to mention to the audience that we are having, and you're first to hear this, Colin, we are going to have a special announcement in the media on the 8th of August. We are going to reveal, because we've had thousands and thousands of people reading these stories saying, we want to see how the codes are broken down. We want to see why Rackstraw is fingered. We are revealing all the secrets to the codes on August 8th.
And Robert Rackstraw, by the way, you reached out to him. He's sort of heavy set, bearded. Is he a vagrant? Does he have a home? Where is he?
Well, he says in public documents and in the media that he's a homeless disabled vet. We have found out, and the audience will find out on August 8th, that that's an absolute cover-up. This man has a 45-foot yacht at a yacht club. You're going to love it. It's called Poverty Sucks. It's part of his con. He has he's living in a million-dollar condo complex on Bankers Hill in San Diego. And he plays the poor man. That's, I guess he doesn't want people to think he got money.
Interesting. Was there ever another suspect? I've read about, I can go online, look up D.B. Cooper, Wikipedia suspects. There was somebody in the Central Oregon at one point. There was one other story that beyond D.B. Cooper that I was a little engaged with for a couple years, where there was somebody that talked about somebody came home in Central Oregon. They were sopping wet, blah, blah, blah. Did you ever have one other suspect that lined up for many, if not all, of the questions and accusations?
A good newsman, and I was a newsman, goes through these research and follows the evidence, not his theory. And we had the wrong suspect for 8 months. That was Dick Briggs, the drug dealer, because they complained. These drug runners said, look, we're emphatic. We know he claimed. We know they found his money. He's got to be Cooper. Well, when that dead end happened after 8 months, it pointed me at his 7-year secret crime partner, a Vietnam vet who happened to have been a D.B. Cooper suspect in 78-79. And so we switched. And that shows the credibility of our cold case team. We follow the leads. And yes, there have been about 10 solid suspects over the years that the FBI have looked at and cleared. But we think there's one that they're quite embarrassed about.
Yeah, by the way, of the suspects, how many are now living?
I believe there's one left in failing health, other than Rackstraw. Rackstraw is 74 years old. He's a retired professor at UC Riverside, California.
Tom Colbert is joining us. The book is The Last Master Outlaw, How He Outfoxed the FBI Six Times, But Not a Cold Case Team. His co-author is Tom Solacy. Let's go back to the night it happened. In the process of your investigation, Are there little facts that are fascinating that maybe I haven't read? Something that makes you laugh, something that is odd. The flight itself. It was like a Northwest Airlines flight. It was, you know, was it full? Whatever happened to the pilots, maybe the stewardesses? Was there anybody else in the plane that was noteworthy? Are there little facts out there in the process that you found fascinating?
I will tell you the if they really want to read everything that's been verified and found in FBI records and elsewhere, they should look at the book, because the book has all the great stories. I will tell you there are a few that stick out. First of all, we have confirmed that Robert Rackstraw has 22 confirmed fake identities that he used in 5 countries while working 6 jobs and having 3 families.
Wow!
This man is off the scale genius at that time. So he came to America. He obviously he lived here in California. But what's fascinating, while he's in the military, he gets kicked out at Fort Rucker, Alabama, no one knew beyond the grunts in the foxholes that he beat his wife for 6 years. And suddenly the children are old enough to know right and wrong at 3 and 5, and they start screaming. And that's when Rackstraw's pulled aside, and they find a way to kick him out of the military. That was his stick-it-to-the-man function. That's when he realized he was angry. You trained me up for 7 years, I'm going to show you what I can do with that. And that's where it started. And the funniest part of it is his character, he lived for 5 months in the Northwest as Norman D. Winter, a Swiss chalet owner walking America. And he lived. During the day, he was scoping out. He was finding, he went on a fake elk scouting mission. He went on a dredge boat to learn how it works. He did all sorts of things. But at night, he'd come back to the town and sleep on people's couches for 5 months. He vanished from that couch the night before, and Normandy Winter was never seen again. The next day, D.B. Cooper showed up. And after the jump, Rackstraw came home to his family and hid in the high Sierra Nevada foothills. Normandy Winter and D.B. Cooper were never seen again after he came home.
The big announcement coming up is on August 8th regarding the decoded letters. I just love people who deep dive on stuff, and this is fascinating. Lass Master Outlaw. It says here how he outfoxed the FBI 7 times. Is it 6 or 7? I think I misread it earlier. Is it 6 or 7?
Well, we have a 21st chapter coming involving escape and the coding. And we consider that they didn't see the codes in these 6 letters, number 7.
By the way, you're also the co-executive producer. D.B. Cooper, Case Closed, documentary on the History Channel, which I've seen. You can look that up. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Everything in the world's on YouTube. Tom Colbert, absolutely fascinating. I am going to get the book. Because I thought I knew everything and have been down this hole a million times, but that last story I did not know of. And I thank you so much for joining us on our Saturday podcast.
Thanks, Colin. God bless.
God bless you. Thank you. Great stuff.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Well done.
We'll talk to you guys on August 8th.
Yeah, we'll do. Thank you.